freedom spoken here. This is Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Chris Wagner and Todd Herman sitting in on the commute with Carlson. John Carlson out on a well-deserved vacation. You're listening to Talk Radio 570 KVI. We're doing something for the rest of this hour. We're going to let you call in and you give us the message that conservatives need to give to win elections. If you think that you have the secret sauce, so to speak, to borrow a term from Jay Inslee.
He's so good.
Governor Jay Inslee.
He's such a good looking
If you think you have the secret sauce, we're going to put you on. We'll let you go. We'll, if you think you have what it takes to be the best caller of the week, and we'll turn you loose. We'll let you go.
Yeah, but you got to be formed
now,
by.
Now, if you're bad, we'll just cut you off.
And you got to be informed by information.
Yeah, it's information. It's entertaining. But if you know how to communicate the message, we'll put you on.
Yeah, but I'm going to suggest this: if you call and talk and with numbers. Or you call
with
policy.
No.
Here's the thing that, you know, Alex Castellanos, with who spoke in the last segment, has said it is all about caring about folks.
Yep. So give us a call at 206-421-5757 or put it on our nickel, 888-312-5757. Give us a call. Tell us what the message needs to be. This remaining time, we're going to talk a little bit about how to reach out to people who are not traditional Republican voters. How do we get them to become part of the Republican Party and vote with us and allow us to lead our cities, our states, and our country? We're going to go to Chris in Everett. He thinks that he knows the difference between savant and GOP messaging.
Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I just wanted to start off real quick with the savant message about overthrowing Boeing. From what I understand, maybe I was kind of taking it out of context. I think what she was suggesting is that if Boeing isn't able to economically, provide for the kind of like demand that these workers, you know, are demanding, these higher wages, and whether like it's too high or not, I think she was sort of echoing the sentiment that right now we're seeing all over South America, and that's a lot of these factories, a lot of these manufacturing businesses are sort of going, well, you know, we can't comply with the demands of the workforce, and then they go bankrupt, and oftentimes the banks will come in and say, hey, you know, we have to, you know, consolidate, and you owe us money, and so a lot of these workers are taking over the factories and going, hey, you know, the owners have filed for bankruptcy, and, you know, we want to have democracy in the workplace, and they take it over, and they come to work, even though they're not guaranteed a paycheck, but they say, like, hey, everyone keep working, everyone keep making things, and oftentimes they end up paying off the banks, electing, like, board of directors, you know, and they have these employee-owned co-ops, and I think that's
so do you think
she
she's right, Chris?
I think democracy in government is just as good as democracy in the workplace.
Interesting to me. And actually, I do a lot of work in the business world, and I teach leadership all around the world. Written 12 books, a number of them on leadership. And one of the things that's interesting to me, I did a research project and did an interview with a lady who does generational codes, she calls them, understanding the difference between generations and how they perceive the workplace. And this is interesting. You say you're 23,
yep.
and this is exactly where 23-year-olds think. They think that the workplace is a democracy.
Yep.
They think that, hey, man, I'm 23, and I should be able to tell you, I know you're 53, and you've spent 30 years building this business, and you own it, and everything is on the line. And actually, business is not a democracy. Business is actually, it's a kingdom, if you want. Now,
yeah,
if,
exactly.
And so this is what I find fascinating, is that people think that they can go to work and trade time for money and get the, you know, $20 an hour, $50 or whatever they get paid, and that somehow they're able to tell the boss the way they're going to run the business. And that's exactly what she's saying, and that's exactly what socialism thinks that they do. Eventually, what usually ends up with most socialistic states is that they end up with centralized power who then dictates to everybody else. That's usually how it progresses. But
right.
So you also said you had something about GOP messaging. What do you think?
Yeah, I just think we're sort of coming on like a generational turning. And I read a fascinating book by Strauss and Howe called The Fourth Turning. It's talking about how essentially every generation, every 20 years, you have sort of a shift in economic thought that sort of precipitates by like a bubble and a collapse and then a war that, you know, kind of follows. And this is going back to like the, you know, the Harding administration, where you had sort of like a supply side economics deregulation. Obviously what happened, there was a housing bubble in Miami that burst because of a hurricane, you know, caused the Great Depression. And then, so you had FDR and come in, and you had sort of this new like liberal sort of economics, and that's like sort of economics that my grandparents grew under, is like the age of FDR.
Right. So where do you think we're at now?
I think that, well, you had Reagan after right. FDR, you know, 40 years FDR, and then you had this shift in like the Jimmy Carter and massive inflation. So the American people, especially in Generation X, were going like, hey, you know, this is not good, liberal economic policy, you know, the misery index is through the roof. And so then you had a turn to Reaganomics. And of course, Generation X embraced like deregulation, lowering of taxes. And what happened is, you know, essentially 32 years of Reaganomics up until 2008 created a bubble that burst. You know, we have two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Hey. So now my generation, we're looking toward more like, hey, this 32 years of Reaganomics has just exploded. This is not working.
Chris,
and so
Chris, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Do you have a job now?
Yes.
Is it a democracy?
No, I'm a member of a union, but we're not. We have a little bit more say, so, I guess, than like non-union shops.
You know, I've started a bunch of businesses, and it's always interesting to me because when I start them, I tend to use my own money.
Mm-hmm. And you're by yourself.
Right. I never see anyone else in the room when I get these things started. And once I get them started, I tend to use my own money to hire people. And then when I hire people, when I'm starting a new business, I tend to do that without paying myself. And then I go for a while without paying myself a dime. And then I hire more people and I pay them instead of myself. And eventually I begin to take a salary. And if the business does well, as some of them have done, some of them not, I begin to pay myself more than the people who work for me.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly want their input. I certainly want to hear their ideas. But I don't buy. And I have to tell you, with all due respect, I think you are so far off on the very idea of how business works. I want you to tell me why, with all the capital I place at risk in order to start a business, when I pay people instead of myself, why on earth do I then need to let someone else control my capital, MY, business?
I would say that if I believe in sole proprietorship, but I think
it's not a sole proprietorship, it's a corporation, and I want you to tell me why I should let someone else have any say in it at all.
Because workers are the ones that are making
no they're
product
not I again
money.
Let's just let me rewind. My money, my time, I pay people instead of myself. It is not the workers that drove anything.
You took the risk.
I found them. They accepted the money. I took the risk.
Workers
they agreed to work
no
for me.
Workers take no risk. Workers right. take no risk.
So again, given all those factors, Chris, I have to ask you with all due respect, why on earth would I cede any control to people who didn't also put their lives and their bankrolls at risk?
I think in terms of democracy in the workplace...
I'm not talking about democracy in a workplace. I'm asking you to answer a very specific question. Why should I cede any control to someone who wasn't there, who didn't put their own capital at risk, who I hired and paid instead of paying myself? You do understand what I'm saying. I earn no money. I put money out. I put it into other people's hands. And now I'm being told that once a business starts to do well, I need to give up control. I'm just asking you to explain to me again, why would I possibly do that?
Because unfortunately, oftentimes these companies get really big, and you know, I understand you put your risk and a lot of your money, initial capital, that it sort of becomes a race to the bottom, right? So if workers, you know, all of a sudden the company is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and if you have lower taxes, the business has no incentive to go ahead and, you know, give their employees better pay, better benefits. They go instead channel it to Wall Street. They go and
okay, you know what, Chris, you know, we're going to ask you to stick around.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to see what other people think about what Chris was going to say. And 30 seconds to go, Widener, you wanted to make a point. You're just burning it up. Okay, when we come back, Chris is going to explain to us why business owners should democratize their businesses. Talk Radio 570 KVI, The Commute with Carlson.
Talk Radio 570 KVI. Lars Larson, weekdays 6 to 9 p.m.
You're listening to Talk Radio 570 KVI. I'm Chris Widener with my good friend Todd Herman, sitting in for John Carlson on The Commute with Carlson. And we are talking with Chris from Everett, and he's talking to us about democracy in the workplace and the race to the bottom and lots of other things that you learn when you're going to community college.
Some
at
other
age 23.
Catchphrases.
Back, yeah, when you're learning the catchphrases.
Yeah, and he's a working man.
No, I love Chris. He's a nice guy, but we obviously have some difference of opinion, and I can tell that Chris can take it, because when you were jumping on him, he was sticking around. This wasn't contentious in any way. But Chris, I want to sort of reframe and ask you a different question, because it seems as though we have a conflict here, and I really believe it's a conflict, a generational conflict. I've done a lot of research in terms of the way different generations view the workplace and view capitalism and those kinds of things.
Like what I was lamenting on before, how you had like FDR, New Dealism, Coolidge deregulation, Reaganomics, and now you have sort of
Obama. So I'm going to ask you a question. Have you ever heard the term, I'm assuming you have, but I'm just going to ask, have you ever heard the term risk-reward ratio?
Is that similar to like a cost-benefit analysis?
Well, I mean, it's a ratio. So the ratio, it essentially says that the more risk you take, the more reward you get. Sometimes the reward is financial, sometimes it's control, whatever. The less risk that you take, the less reward you get. Also, financial benefits, control, etc. So most people have historically looked at the risk-reward ratio and said, and this is the point that Todd was making. Todd was saying, I took all of the risk. I quit my job. I opened the shop. I signed the personal guarantee for the office space. I put my money. I bought the computers. I put my name on the line. I took all of the risk. And when I got it up and running, you sauntered in and said, hey, I'd like to get paid $20 an hour. All right, I'll pay you $20 an hour to sit here and to produce widgets for me.
Well, I'm not paying myself.
While you're not paying yourself, still taking the risk that you're not going to be able to pay your mortgage or whatever, but usually people like that have saved up enough money to fund themselves while they're doing the startup. But what happens is then when it turns and the business becomes profitable, because they took all of the risk, they now get all of the reward. And people are saying now, the discrepancy between the rich and the poor, and that guy made, you know, $30 billion or $1 billion or $100 million, or he gets paid $20 million a year. It's because of the risk reward ratio. There is no risk whatsoever in showing up on somebody's doorstep and saying, will you pay me to produce widgets? And what I find fascinating is that some people, and it's not just your generation, it's people in different generations as well now, that say, and it's socialistic thinking, that I should get as much as the other guy regardless of how much risk I took.
But it goes further than that. And here's, I just, you know, Chris, I'm sure that you and I could sit down and eat a fair trade sandwich and drink, you know, a rainforest friendly coffee together and probably come to a lot of agreement. So I just want you to, I want you to cast yourself in the role of someone I've hired after I've put all my capital at risk. And after I'm not paying myself, okay? You work for me, I'm paying you, but I am not paying myself. And yet I'm continuing to pay lawyers and file patents for $50,000 a shot. So you're sitting in the office across from me, and you are now going to make the case as to why I should give you democratic control of the business. Go ahead.
I'd say, hey, Todd, you know, I was really hoping that I really want to get together and do card check here in the shop. You know, I want to get together. I've talked to a lot of my colleagues.
Yeah, Chris, let me cut you off there. There will never be I will never have a union in a business I start. That will never happen. So, listen, can you get back to the floor and do your job?
Well, I should be protected by the Employee Free Choice Act, which didn't pass. But, you know, if I have in the revisions...
Yeah, Chris, right now, so you know what I'm doing is looking at my watch and at your pay rate. $20 an hour, this... Yeah, and you know, while we're on the topic of this, Chris, I have some news for you. There's a country called India. Have you heard of it?
Yes.
Yeah, they do this work for about $5 an hour. I'm paying you 20. My patience is waning, so you're going to talk about something about unionizing or more control. You really think you could make this case to me, or do you think you should get back to your desk and go to work?
I think during lunch I'm going to rally up the troops, and if I can get a third of the workers...
Yeah, then you're going to be fired. Yeah.
If you start rallying the
yeah.
troops,
and then you're out of you.
Yeah. Right, okay, so the way that would go would be, with Chris, with all due respect, you are, in fact,
we
fired.
Love you, Chris. Yeah,
we love
for
you.
Calling.
Thank you for the call. And that is, in fact, the way so much of this thinking goes. I had... And by the way, if you have thoughts on what Chris had to say, have you faced this as a business owner? I find it utterly, utterly, utterly astonishing
I've
that
been
people
thinking,
who don't
Todd,
take this risk...
that I think we should have card check. So during lunch,
they tried it.
During lunch, I'm going to rally the troops.
They tried this at my first startup. There was a guy who came in trying to organize tech workers into a union. My first startup was called The Dial. I came back from lunch. I'm the CEO and the founder of this thing. I come back from lunch and there's some goofball up in my conference room talking to the troops. And I walk into the admin. I say, pardon me, Kathy, who is that? She goes, oh, he's a union representative. I go, he's what? He's a union representative. In my business?
He's trespassing. Get him off my property.
I walked in and said, walked into the door and said, what are you doing here? And all the employees turned around and goes, I'm talking to your employees about their right to unionize. I said, good. Here's the way this conversation will go. Anyone who unionizes gets absolutely no equity. No stock. By the way, anyone else who unionizes, he now negotiates on your behalf. And furthermore, if this conversation continues, you, sir, are leaving. And I pointed at him. What I am unable to understand is not the idea that people communicate with their workplace in order to set good rates and negotiate. That's the art of negotiation is very much part of life. What I am astonished by is the mindset that exists that somehow somebody who built something you had no hand in now owes you.
But you were
a
lucky.
Piece of it.
You were lucky, Todd. I mean,
right.
You were lucky that you got that. I mean, isn't that the pitch that Obama gave the country?
Right.
That's the pitch that he gave them.
Right.
Somehow you got
that.
Lucky. You didn't build that.
Right.
We built that. The workers built that.
Yep.
That's the pitch that Obama and socialists always give. You didn't deserve
right.
it.
Right.
And then they get where it really gets is, you know, well, it's white privilege and it's all the little things that they throw out there that say this is the real behind the scenes reason. You know,
you didn't build that.
It's because
you didn't build that.
It's like, you know, people, they'll look at the success that I've achieved in life. And I was sitting around with a group of people the other day, and they were talking about, starting to talk about Walmart and why the workers should, and they're like, they don't have a choice. They have to work at Walmart. And I said, no, it's not true. I lived in 28 homes. I went to 11 different schools. My dad died when I was 4. I had as bad an upbringing as you could possibly imagine, and I made it. There is no excuse for people who say they can't make it. Anybody can make it. And there's no excuse to tear down somebody who did make it.
That's right. When we later in this hour, I'm going to tell you another little something about our friend Trayvon Martin. You will not believe the role into which he's been cast. You won't believe the role an artist has cast Trayvon Martin as. Also, we're going to get with Kurt, who is going to respond to the scenario of a business of explaining to a boss why he should give you democratic control over the business. If you are a business owner and are facing the aspects of unionization or the prospect of it, give us a call, 421-5757, 888-312-5757. And if you can explain to the Chrises of this world who think that businesses should be democratized, give us a call. Talk Radio 570 KVI, The Commute with Carlson. We'll be right back.
speech spoken here. This is Talk Radio 570 KVI.
You're listening to The Commute.
You didn't build that. You didn't build that. You didn't build that.
What do we got here?
It's an airplane for shooting marshmallows.
You didn't build that.
Mitt Romney strikes me so hard, it makes me feel like Shirley Sharon.
It's out of context.
Those words aren't mine.
Private sector is doing fine.
Feels good. When the economy's weak,
responding with a national security leak,
Osama bin Laden, I killed.
And that was a mission
you didn't build.
You're listening to The Commute with Carlson. I'm Chris Widener with my good friend Todd Herman, sitting in on Talk Radio 570 KVI. And we would love to have you join us here on line 206-421-5757, or put it on our nickel, 888-312-5757. We just got off the phone with a young gentleman, well-meaning, I believe, a good guy, not particularly thinking straight, as far as I'm concerned. Lots of buzzwords and catchphrases that he learned in Socialism 101 at the local community college. But we gave him a situation, and he was basically saying that workplace is a democracy, and that everybody should have the ability to have control and have a say. And so Todd gave him this role-playing situation. Okay, I've started the company. You're now working for me. You're sitting in front of me. You tell me why I should cede control of my business to you. And we have Kurt from Port Orchard who calls, and he says that he has a response for Todd's scenario. So I'm going to turn it back over to Todd. Todd, you pitch him the scenario, and let's hear the response from Kurt in Port Orchard.
All right, Kurt, first of all, welcome to the show. And now let's shift into the role-playing gear. We're going to be reality-based. This is me using my money to start the business, my money to pay the lawyers for the patents, my money to buy the technology, my money to do the office. And now I've hired you. I'm paying you, but not paying myself. So now we're going to enter into the role-playing scenario. Hey, Kurt, come on into the office. You wanted to chat? Hey, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. You guys are doing an awesome job as a fill-in here, but it sounds more like you're permanent. I appreciate this time to chat with you, but some of the guys in the shop and I have been talking, and we'd like permission to, on our own time, come into the shop once a month on Saturday morning. We think we know how to tweak some of this machinery and improve our output.
Wow.
We'd like to sit down and talk seriously about this.
Hey, you know what? I want to thank you for coming in and saying this. And, you know, instead of doing this just on Saturday, you know, maybe we could devote some time where this could become, you know, maybe part of your job, where we get a little time together during the week where I give you an hour to brainstorm. I'd love to hear about this. And if you really have this ability to increase our output, would you be open to maybe, in lieu of a raise, working on a percentage of the gain that you provide the company?
Oh, absolutely. That's what it's all about. You know, some would say I scratch your back, you scratch mine. But the whole thing is we've got to improve ourselves. We've got to be better than that outfit down the street.
Right. And I agree with you. So, Kurt, let me ask you, is everybody on the factory floor, everybody agrees on this?
About 75% of us agree.
Okay. You know what? I you've been with me a long time, and I want to ask you if you would run this program for me. And here's
Absolutely.
The thing that we're going to have an agreement on, is I'm going to measure you on a couple things. Is the actual output. I need to understand in specific what ROI I'm going to see, return on investment on this. But I'm going to do one other thing. After you write a plan and put it to me in writing with deliverables that are exactly stated and that are backed up with math, I'm going to match that up against how I intend to pay you. But today, I need you to write up a job description. I'm promoting you. And I'm going to promote you to shop leader. So it's called Carrots and Sticks, and that's the way it works. So, Kurt, congratulations. You've convinced me to pay you upside against what you bring my business. I've given you a raise. Now, How does that compare, breaking out of our scenario, how does that compare to walking into a room and saying, hey, I know you spent all your money to start this business, but I want control? You, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a young person, if you're 23, you've bought the race to the bottom Kool-Aid, you have just listened to a man who knows how to make a case in a workplace.
Radio gold. I mean, that was radio gold. I'm sitting here. I'm just listening, right? I'm on the other side of the table. I've walked away from my microphone. I'm just listening to this. I'm like, Kurt gets it.
This is a man who's successful. Kurt, I want to thank you very much for the phone call. You've done a service for young Seattle.
And here's what's interesting. Imagine if both these guys got what they wanted.
Right.
If both of them actually got what they wanted. What was the previous caller? The guy from the young kid?
Chris.
Let's imagine if Chris got what he wanted. He would have gone from $20 an hour to $25 an hour. He'd have gotten an extra week's vacation pay. But what's Kurt going to get? Kurt's going to get $10 to $20 million in stock incentives over the next 10 years. I mean, that's the upside to a guy like Kurt, who says, hey, man, I want you to become successful. And you then turned around and said to him, I'm going to give you a portion of the upside. So you're trading. Yep. You're trading $5 an hour for the potential of millions of dollars.
And here's the thing that I think. Well, people who want this sort of democracy, like Shama Swant, the new city council member, says that the workers of Boeing should rise up and take over the factory. Really, honestly, this is what she's saying. Then we're going to rise up and take over your office, Shama.
I want to camp on her front lawn.
And I think we should. I remember a story from a man I know who is, I can't name because I don't have the permission, legend in radio. I mean, really, really legendary guy. Worked with Dick Clark and ran radio and records. I mean, the guy, if I said his name, Seattle would recognize him. He ran a radio shop here in Seattle. And those folks did get together and unionize. And it was run, the unionization effort was run by someone he'd worked with for a long time. Right-hand person. And she succeeded in unionizing the workplace. And weeks after that, she went into my friend's office, knocked on the door, and said, hey, can I chat with you about some human relations things? I said, no. So what do you mean? You can't talk to me about this any longer. I have no control over this. I'm not allowed to have this conversation with you. But we've worked together for 15 years. Right. Now we no longer do. Someone else has to be in the
room. Adversarial now.
Right. And if you want to compare, just do a quick comparison about businesses that are doing phenomenally well versus businesses who are having a lot of challenges. Why do you think it has never worked despite the consistent efforts? Why do you think Microsoft, Google, Amazon,
yeah, despite wait, being... Wait till they try and unionize Amazon.
Right. And it has never happened. And so why do you think that has never occurred, despite all of the efforts to make sure it occurs?